When you have once seen the glow of happiness on the face of a beloved person, you know that a man can have no vocation but to awaken that light on the faces surrounding him. In the depth of winter, I finally learned that within me there lay an invincible summer. Albert Camus.
Welcome to the Lost Traveler podcast. I'm your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I have a special guest joining me. We're meeting for the first time. His name is Tim Bui. And you're quite a fascinating character, I have to say. My research about you. First of all, welcome.
Really, oh, thank you so much. I feel very welcome.
Your co-host here. You know, everything that I've read about you, some of the videos that I've watched on YouTube, you're like me, you're a plate spinner. You've got a lot of things moving in your life, entrepreneurial ventures to martial arts, to even some philanthropic interests.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I feel like my life has been like, first of all, many lives in one life. That's what it feels like. And I think it's because my values have changed so much throughout my life, like very core values and belief systems that I've had. And I think what separates everybody is values and beliefs and what they, you know, their vision for the world and how they see the world. And those things have shifted so many times, like concrete shifts, not like just like, it's just been like in flux. It's like, I was this person and then I was this person. And then I was this person. And then now I feel like in this part of my life, it's taking all of those stories, because for a while I was like, I used to be that person. I'm not that person anymore. I don't even talk about that person. I don't even tell stories about that person. But now it's like, I've come into this space where I'm accepting that that was me. Cause there are like parts of my story that are ugly, that are just, I was just a terrible person, you know? So I would just kind of relegate that to the shadows, so to speak. And now it's just become an acceptance. It's become a part of my journey. It's become part of my power. It's become a way that I can connect to other people who can connect to that part of myself. And I think that creates that dynamism, that vulnerability, that sense of like, hey, this dude's been through some real stuff and I can relate to that because that's where I'm at right now. Because I think if I just come off the way that I am and don't talk about my past, people can't really relate to me because it just seems like I'm just fronting or like I have no, like I'm just perfect or something. And that's not true either.
I disagree. I venture to disagree. I think that we are as perfect as we can be in the moment that we're in. And like you alluded to, there's no time machine to take us into the past. Mm-hmm. Redo or recapture who we were or fix anything that merited fixing in the moment that it happened. Just like there's no time machine to take us into the future to even know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now. 5 minutes ago, I didn't know you. And now it's like I'm hanging out with an old friend, you know? I mean, that profound and that simple at the same time. And when people say to me, I'm not perfect, I'm like, well, I always reflect on my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Okay. This was at the American school in Brasilia, Brazil. And she was a very tall Scottish woman, adored her. And we had to do a project where we had to draw a picture of our house and our family. And my house and my family were not a happy place for me. And I did not like what ended up on the page because it wasn't real. It was the fantasy house and life and family that I wished I had, everyone smiling, you know, all of that. It was a privileged life in many ways, but it was not a happy environment. And I remember this like it was yesterday. I crumpled up the piece of paper and I threw it across the room. And I sat there with my arms crossed, a little storm cloud over my head. And Mrs. Arlene came up and she put her hand on my shoulder, thinking that I didn't like the quality of the work She said, "Oh, Henry, nobody's perfect." And I looked up at her and I was like, "Mrs. Ardeline, how can I be any different than I am right now? Doesn't that mean that I'm as perfect as I can be?"
Yeah.
I still hold to that. I still, you know, 50 years later, I hold to that because this is it. This moment is it. This is all we have. No yesterday, no tomorrow. It all lives in our imagination except for the now.
Yeah. 100% agree with that. And I love that story, how you like that moment cemented it for you.
Yeah.
When I say like perfect, I just mean that like I don't have like a lot of, I don't have really any vices. And
none?
I don't think a lot of, not really. Like I just, like I've basically at this point in my life, I've reprogrammed my entire subconscious to only do things that empower me. And that's just like 100% through and through what I believe. And so when I share that with people, they just can't relate to that. So like, I have to start from where I started. And if I just came that way, people were just like, okay, you're just like, you know, like they just can't, you know? So, I mean, when there are certain people that can, and they can definitely appreciate me for where I am. Mm-hmm. But I mean, when I'm just like talking in like a group of people that don't know me or something, I just have to start from like, hey, like a sense of vulnerability, like just, you know, this was who I was or whatever. And I think it just adds some richness to the relationship so they can get a sense of something that they can understand from their like perspective.
Your generous sponsorship and individual support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a charitable project under the fiscal sponsorship of United Charitable, a nonprofit 501c3 organization. The Lost Travelers Club focuses primarily on the needs of parents who have outlived their beloved children. We recently launched our new Brain Candy Project wing, providing art supplies to children still struggling with critical or terminal health-related conditions. We hope to raise enough funds to launch Brain Candy, an arts and literature magazine created by and for these young people. Find out more at www.braincandy.online. Thank you.
Well, now that you've opened that can of worms, care to elaborate a little bit on your biography?
Sure. Yeah, of course. I'm very open to that. My parents came here from a war-torn country and they're immigrants. And so all they knew how to do was work. They're really busy. And so we're also not very emotionally close, my parents and I. They're like two or three generations ahead of me. They had me, I was the last one. They had me very late. I grew up quite estranged from my parents. And I think that created a condition for me to be chronically depressed, just really lonely growing up. And then I had this like transcendental out-of-body experience when I was like 12 or 13 that further like estranged me from like everyone, like from school, from my peers, because I had this experience that no words could describe. It was a transcendental, like liminal experience that I was interdimensional and I was way more than, you know, just this 3D reality. So how do you explain that? It was like a 12 or 13 year old. So that was like extremely traumatic for me, just like alienating.
You know what triggered? And then
just meditation. I just like Googled how to meditate and I just like, how do you meditate? Zazen meditation or something. And then like, I just did it like my third time I did it. And wow. I had this experience where I was like out of it for like 3 hours. I was just meditating like for what was like day became night. And I was definitely in some different dimensions. And it made me question everything that I had been told about this world and like who I was, what I was, and what we all were. Like it just, but it made me know that there's more truth. And I had like a taste for that now. And then I had a taste for what wasn't true. And so it was very hard for me to connect just like on a day-to-day, just normal conversation at school with your peers and stuff, talking about Power Rangers or whatever. Right. And I was just like, none of this is real, you guys. But like, you know, like there's just no way. So all this estrangement basically led me to just find love, you know, in weird places. And one of those weird places was in the streets. I always tell people, like, one of my role models is, like, you know, Tupac. He was, like, you know, like, although he was, like, a thug and very troublesome and whatever, he was also, like, he had a lot of inspiration for the world, like a lot of love for the world, at least, like, in the later part of his life. Yeah. And he was a legend in that way to me. And so a lot of the ways that I try to live was, like, half Scarface, half Tupac, you know, like, I want respect, I want love. And that was all it was for me. And so I would do anything for that, including, you know, selling drugs, fighting people, like, selling guns, growing drugs, like, everything that you could see in a movie. That was my life. And I thought that was the cool thing. I was like, oh, I'm living in a life, but I mean, like, I'm living the life, but that's not really... I was, like, worried about, like, oh, if you take a picture of me, like, the FBI are going to be able to see me. I had friends that were, like, getting, you know, arrested and going to penitentiary and all this. So, like, I was paranoid, you know, it came with everything that Scarface came with. And I was like, yeah, this is probably not how I want to spend my life. Yeah. So that was, like, one period of my life. And then, you know, still depressed at that period. And then, like, just got into this relationship with somebody who I call, like, my twin flame. And, you know, exiting that relationship really entered, like, this long period of spirituality, of self-development, of, like, finding myself, so to speak, and, like, eliminating what I was not. And so I think that does lead me to where I am without going into all the details, but it's been quite a journey. Yeah.
That's amazing. I looking at you, I would not say that this is a Scarface.
Yeah,
you've got this wonderful fresh face, youthful glow about you that does not carry the burden of that kind of baggage.
Yeah. If I showed you my passport photo from, like, my last passport, I look like a totally different human being. Scoundrel.
But that's great. You know, I think you know, in hindsight, we look back, it's hard to see the forest for the trees in it sometimes. Yeah. And there are pivotal moments where everything shifts, worlds turn on a moment, right? I've had several of those moments that I can pinpoint in my biography that set me on a completely different trajectory for my future.
Yeah.
Do you have any of those that you are, like, so clear that this was the moment that pivoted me?
Not so much. I mean, I have, like little milestone moments, I guess, or, like, you know, where I decided to step out of that life. There were a couple moments of, like, alchemy where I had studied, you know, I learned, like, some esoteric things ever since I was young. And, you know, I learned esoteric martial arts, for instance, which is quite unheard of. But one of the things I think was, like, I was lucky enough to have, like, my dream car when I was very young, like 16, and that was in my life for a while. And then there was a moment when I was like, okay, to move to the next stage of my life, I need to give something that's important to me. And at the time, this material possession of mine was, like, you know, my thing. And so I sold it, and I used that money to buy some equipment to start a grow house, and as a couple of, you know, operate, like, pay for rent, you know, all those operational expenses. And then that led me to, like, that catapulted me to the next realm of my life. And I had done that throughout my life, just letting go of things that were materially important to me in a previous phase of my life, like motorcycle, you know, just symbolic things, you know. And they've catapulted me each time to, like, another part, a new part of my life. And so I would say that's been an experience that's been recurring for me, is just loving myself enough to know that my value is higher than these things that I've put on this sort of pedestal of cherishing these things, and taking the energy from that and putting into something new and creating, like, a new life from that. So I think there are moments like that, but I don't necessarily see, like, pivotal moments where, like, my consciousness changed so much. Well, can you share with me some of yours, though?
Yeah, I'll share a couple of them. Obviously, that first one with Mrs. Ardeline with the drawing, that was pivotal.
Yeah, that's an early one.
Very early one. Actually, there are a couple of other very early ones. That was fourth grade. Something happened in second grade that was...
Fourth grade is like ninth, 9 years old, right?
Yeah, and then second grade was like eight. Right? So fourth grade must be 9 or 10, somewhere in there. When I was in second grade, I was at the international school in Vienna, Austria. I know, we got around.
Yeah. My dad
was a cultural diplomat for the USIA, the US Information Agency, which is now defunct. But their mandate since the 50s was to take all of this essentially appropriated culture
that America, and export it
and wrap it up in a big red, white, and blue package and sell it back to the world as right and better than you did it. So mission accomplished. This was at a time before there was a McDonald's outside the US.
Yeah, I understand the history behind it. I study a lot. This was very intriguing history to me. So
the
fact that we're connecting on this is,
fascinating time to be alive. And I was on the PR side of things, right? So I saw behind the scenes. I looked at America through that lens. And that was really interesting.
Wow.
I remember it was in second grade, and my teacher, Mrs. Fend, which I thought was a perfect name for her. It's like fend for yourself. Mrs. Fend had us write a paragraph as homework, and the theme was, what is your greatest fear? And my first question, as I was staring at the blank sheet of paper on my desk, was, why would anyone ask a child to meditate on their fear? That tells you what kind of 8-year-old I was. And I sat there, just trying to figure that out. And the only thing that I could think of, because I wasn't a fearful kid. I wasn't afraid of snakes or the dark or being or anything.
Yeah.
The only thing I could think of was outliving my children.
Wow. You fast were very forward, sharp.
Fast forward, and I have moved through that fear. I lost my son to brain cancer when he was 13. He was my only child. I was a single dad. And once that fear was resolved, it opened up a whole new place in me to recognize that it is completely plausible and possible to walk through this life fearlessly.
Wow.
Right. So his release of the physical opened up freedom from fear.
Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups, virtual or in-person book club meetings. For further information, go to psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
Do you feel like fear is unnecessary?
Yeah, I do. That's a quick answer. But I feel like fear is born of ignorance. Mm-hmm. And we have all the information of the world at our fingertips, literally. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And I think intellectually we can absorb it.
Yeah.
Through social media or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know that our hearts can take it. And so that's where fear blocks.
That's an embodiment of the truth. That's how I'm taking that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm fearless, and I can't think of a better way to be in this crazy world right now. Mm. And if I can be authentically who I am right now, publicly, then anyone who's a witness effortlessly, automatically has permission to do the same on their terms.
That's the Marianne Williamson quote, right?
I don't know.
It's my favorite quote.
Is it?
I could read it to you.
There's something about frequency, you know? There are a lot of people who are on the same frequency right now.
That is like, it's, oh man, I go back and forth about this. Like, is fear, is it necessary, or like, is it a part of like our human makeup or instinct? Is it what makes us great? Or is it just like, just noise? And I don't know, like, I think like emotions are, I think fear is an emotion probably. I mean, but there's also like this parasympathetic sense, or like this autonomic sense of fear as well, right? Like when your body is just like, this is not good for you, like being at the edge of a cliff or something. And in a way that serves you to listen to your body, right? And some of that's conditioning though. Some of that's just like, just noise. And some of that's like, this is real. And we have to be able to suss that out. Like what is helpful? What is conducive to what we want to do? And how does this fear guide us? But I think in the sense of the fear that you're talking about, where it's just unexplored, unexamined, quiet assumptions that you've taken on at some point throughout your life that were passed down to you, or an experience that you chose to look away from and have an aversion to. I think those types of fears are born out of ignorance. And I, you know, one of the comments that I get from people when I first meet them is like, because we play like those get to know you games. I don't know if you've heard of them. Like, it's like a card game. It would be pretty cool, but it's like, you pull a card and there's like three levels, and it's just like, you know, like the question could be like, when you first met me, what was your impression of me, and what was wrong about it, or something like that. So we play these little get to know you games. Like one of them is called like, We're Not Strangers. I highly recommend it. It's cool. And people always tell me like, you have this unapologetic quality to you. And I'm like, yeah, like what is there to be sorry about?
Right.
So I feel like that's totally related to what you're saying. It's like people are so like, they're just so quick to say sorry. They're so quick to, but it's just an unexamined part of our psyche that is uncomfortable, and people are used to being comfortable.
I have a theory about that.
Tell me.
I think that when you go back and you look at early humans and you look at the environment that they were in, right, which was quite dangerous, open to the elements, there was this sense of, I mean, you could not help but be in the moment. It was in survival mode 24/7.
Yeah.
Somebody had to be up tending the fire to keep the wild animals at bay.
Yeah.
Right. And we were naked, out in nature, unprotected. And we were singing to each other because speech hadn't developed yet. And the way that humans communicated to one another was by vocalizing sounds and projecting those sounds, sometimes across great distances. Hey, they're coming to kick our ass, or hey, we're coming to kick your ass, or hey, there's a big mammoth over there, let's go. You know, it was all about projection of sound and emotion.
Yeah.
So coming from the theater world.
I love this perspective. Thank you so much for sharing.
I think about how trepidatious people are about singing in public. I think about how trepidatious people are about being naked in public.
Yeah.
Both of those are your natural state. And to be in your natural state means that you're vulnerable. You're vulnerable, you're unprotected from attack. Be it physical attack, right? Or attack from the elements, cold, heat, whatever. Attack of people's judgment, right? And so it takes a great willful act of courage.
Yeah.
Put yourself in a vulnerable state. And that's my theory about why people feel uncomfortable. And we have over millennia built structures around humanity to prevent us from feeling vulnerable.
Yeah.
We've created buildings here in Spain, these houses that I'm living in, you know, 800 years old or more. They're built of 2 foot thick granite.
Right?
So, I know this village was settled in 1221.
Yeah.
Right. People don't have in the West a concept of that kind of history.
Mm-mm.
And I tell you, the summers are brutal here.
Really?
But inside, I don't have any air conditioning. The windows are small. The walls are thick. It's like I'm living in a cooler.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. It's fascinating. And
it is.
And so, you know, when I think of fear and I think of that sense of vulnerability and those things that make us uncomfortable, I always come back to it's the fear of the unknown that makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I've tested that myself throughout my life, mm-hmm. since childhood, and I continue to see it as an adult. You know, and that's really led me to be in the world of life skills education, universal life skills education. Mm-hmm. Right? We have 8 billion people on the planet now, mm-hmm. and every single one learns the same universal life skills. What do you think about when I say life skills, universal essential life skills?
A communication, presentation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hygiene. Grief, nutrition, self-care, financial literacy, emotional literacy, sexual literacy. These are things that every human being learns in one measure or another. So it's not a question of whether we learn these skills. It's how well do we learn them and from whom are we learning them?
Yeah.
Right? From people who, like yourself and like me, who were somewhat estranged from our immediate family environment.
Mm-hmm.
And parents who lacked the toolkit and lacked the proficiency to be able to impart those skills to us in a productive way, we had to go out and find it on our own.
Yeah.
Right? Do you relate to that?
Yeah, no, it's like, well, this whole conversation is very synchronistic. I was invited to a hot spring, you know, earlier this past weekend, and it's like a nudist hot spring, you know, it's known for that. But there were people there that were like ashamed of being naked, even though it was a nudist hot spring. Like you could see, like they were just kind of like
covering.
Yeah, like, or just looking down, or like kind of occasionally, like just like, are you checking me out? Or, you know, just whatever. And then, you know, there were events earlier this week as well where somebody was singing a song. Actually, it was just yesterday. Somebody was singing a song. I was getting a haircut. I was with a friend. And my stylist was like, you should let it out. And then they wouldn't, right? And then later they were singing like under their breath, but they wouldn't let it out either. And like this conversation is so enlightening because these, like you said, are like primal aspects of ourselves that we're shielded from, that we don't even have a connection to. And like, okay, so, you know, in the morning, one of my, like as a quote unquote biohacker, one of the things that I do is like first thing in the morning is I get outside, like in my boxers, and you know, I get the sunlight in my eyes, on my skin. And people are like, how are you outside? Like, you know, there's, you know, I'm in the front yard, I'm in the backyard, whatever. I don't care. Like if I was swimming, you'd see me like kind of like this anyways. Like, it's not like something you'd never see. So, yeah. But people are just always questioning me like, what, you know, how are you able to do that or whatever? It's like, I'm just trying to get the sunlight in. So there's, as you were speaking, there are just so many elements of what you're saying that were enlightening to me that like, it just challenges me even more to open up a new dimension of vulnerability. Right. And like some of these ideas that you're talking about, like I was just, you know, one of my often referenced books is Sapiens, right. And another one that's related to that is the 21st a modern, oh, is that a guide? I have a book right here. It's a great book. It's a modern guide to the 21st century for hunters and gatherers or something like this.
Very, I'll put links to those in the description, by the
way. It is a fantastic book. And it's just, it just talks, it's just another view of what you're talking about. And it just, one of the ideas from that book, just real quickly, is that like we're born into a period where we're prepared for that period. And then as we mature, the transition in technology happens so quickly that what we were raised in, the context of what we were raised in, is no longer the context that we find ourselves in. And we find ourselves illy, adequately, not prepared for it, basically. Right. And so all these are elements of what you're talking about, because we are so disconnected from those roots that you're talking about, like 70,000 years ago or more or so. And like, we're just, it's like we're in this like high levels of stress and high levels of like shelter, but like inside we're so gooey, we're so soft, we're so disconnected that one of the things, totally unrelated, one of the things that kind of unrelated that really, that I really find myself concerned with is mental health. And I think like, you know, the homeless problem is a huge, and that's all related to mental health, and it's just, it's growing and nobody's doing anything about it. And that's part of what drives me, is like, directly, I don't think that there's something I can do. Like, I can't see each person, but I can, you know, create an organization. I can inspire people. I can do all these things. And so that's right. That's what I'm doing.
Are you looking to make a difference in the world, but not quite sure where to start? Join me in becoming part of Desire Childcare Organization's global family. Desire Childcare is a fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda dedicated to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to compromised and vulnerable children. With a monthly sponsorship, you can help make a significant impact on the lives of these young individuals ages 2 to 14. What sets Desire Childcare Organization apart from other charities is that it has zero administrative overhead, takes great pride in full transparency and building trust in our support circle. We also have a short-range plan toward achieving self-sufficiency through agriculture, so the need for support is temporary. Think of it as a leg up. Empowering and inspiring children is our mission, and we want you to join us. By visiting desirechildcare.org today, you will learn more about our organization and how you can help us in our efforts to make a positive impact on these children and their future. So what are you waiting for? Let's make a difference together.
I think this conversation that we're having is so relevant to like where I'm at in life today, and I'm so grateful that we can have this conversation. You have this perspective that really challenges me, you know, like these formative experiences that you have when you're just a kid that you're sharing with me, that are enlightening me today. That's, oh man, I'm so grateful for that. Thank you so much.
Well, it's an honor to be able to share it, because these things, I can't expect that the tools in my kit can be used by anyone else the same way that I use them, right? Because you're not me, but you have a toolkit. Everybody does. I don't care how old you are. I don't care where you come from, your biography, your parents' biography, whatever. Mm-hmm. You already have a toolkit. Those are your life skills, mm-hmm. right? And some tools can be improved upon. That's what I mean by proficiency. And so what I'm here to do is lay out my toolkit and say,
that's cool.
Here, let me show you what I've got. And maybe you've got a tool in your kit that you can synthesize one of my tools with, mm-hmm. and create a unique tool for your journey.
Yeah.
And then someday, hopefully, you'll lay out your kit for somebody else.
I feel like you're such a good storyteller that like these tools are coming out metaphorically, like analogous, like just to, it's just a part of the story, and whatever you get, that's part of the toolkit that you download. And I so appreciate a good storyteller. And so, you know, I'm trying to learn to be a better storyteller, because I think that there's so much power that we can, like exude within the transmission of a story, you know, and you're able to do that effortlessly.
Well, and listen, it's thank you. I think some of it is something I came with in this life. But I think we glean along the path. And this is why I love talking with and mentoring younger folks. Mm-hmm. And this is why I love talking with and mentoring and being mentored by older folks than me, because they've seen some shit. They've seen man's inhumanity, you know, and they come equipped with tools that I can never even imagine having to have built for my life and for myself.
Yeah.
People look at me and say the same thing. I can't imagine losing your only child, right? Well, guess what? There are people who, and they say it's the worst thing that can happen to a person. Well, did it suck? Yeah, it did. It was horrible. But I can't say that it's any worse than having your best friend gunned down in cold blood.
Yeah.
Right? Or I can't say that it's worse than losing a beloved family member or friend, right? Mm-hmm. Or coming, as you say, you know, from an environment of war and oppression, right? I can't say that my experience was worse. I can't say either that it was unnatural. That's a typical response that people come at me with. Oh, it's unnatural for a parent to outlive a child. Well, sorry, but child loss is not new. It's been happening since the beginning of humans. And it's how we react to it. That's the challenge, right? It is our own trigger. Why, whenever I'm triggered by something, my first question is not pointing a finger at somebody else and blaming them or finding the villainy in someone else. Mm-hmm. My grandmother used to say, when you point a finger at somebody else, honey, you got three pointing back at yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And I reflect on that a lot, because when I feel an impulse or a trigger that wants me to peg somebody as a villain, I always check in with myself first and think, why am I triggered by that? Is that their stuff or is that my stuff? I come across this all the time in my mentoring work.
Yeah.
I have to sort out in terms of mental health. And I, believe me, especially after Cameron's loss, I went into a deep depression. Mm-hmm. As one can imagine. And I struggled with depression my entire life. From childhood forward, until I changed the way I ate. Nutrition was the magic key for me to cure my own depression. I even hesitate to call it my depression. It was the depression. It had very little to do with me. Right.
I like that.
It had a lot to do with the culture that I was raised in and the culture that I was living in, especially in the US.
I feel like, as you say, the diet, I feel like it's an imagery that I had come to my mind was maybe potentially it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. You had done so much up to that point, and now you're committing to the nutrition aspect, and that was just like the last thing that you needed to do to just get that energy that you need to overcome the string of depression.
Potentially. Well, I think it was physiological, actually. I think that mental health begins in the gut.
Yeah, that's definitely you know, serotonin, 70% of that is generated within your.
That's right. I mean,
besides serotonin, there's so many other things that.
Oh, right.
I mean, nebula.
Totally. You know, our heart has neurological cells, right? When we talk about the head, the heart.
Mm-hmm. And 100%.
Hand, right? Your hands are what convey the nutrition to your body. And so choices are made. And so what do you think about, I want to get into mental health with you because it's such a prevalent challenge all over the world.
Yeah.
We are challenged now. I mean, you talked earlier about how when you're growing up, the world is a certain way and you're learning things for the time that you're in. Mm-hmm. And then technology changes and you're left at sea because you're not prepared, right? Isn't that the story of generations, right? I look at people my age or older who are really struggling with technology from 20 years ago, let alone how it's changing so fast now. What's your experience of that?
I've always strived to hang out with people that are younger than me. So I know what's coming up and how their mindset is around technology, how they use it, because that's the fastest way. I mean, like, to learn from other people is, you know, the fastest way, really. And the way that their minds are wired around technology is insane. I was just a couple, I guess now maybe 5 years ago, but I was judging at a middle school robotics tournament competition.
Cool.
And it was mind blowing to me that these middle schoolers were programming live these robots. Like, they're like, you, like, it's just like, okay, you have to do these things with this robot. Like, it has to go this way, sense these things, pick up these things, go over here, go. And like, you have 30 minutes to do it. And then we give them another round. They have to, and then they're just constantly like, they're just geniuses. But it was normal for them. And I think we, in the past, we were given this limiting belief that neuroplasticity is something that only happens from 0 to 7. And now we know that actually it happens throughout your entire life. And I think part of the problem with the neuroplasticity thing is people become very attached to their identity. I'm this kind of guy. I'm a red, rare steak guy, or I'm a golf guy, or I'm, these are very rigid, confined labels that we give ourselves that limit everything that we can be and how we can relate to other people. I'm not that kind of guy, and I think that's part of the process of ossification in general. And I think ossification is something that happens in the mind. It happens in the body, that's physiologically, that can present itself as, arthritis, it can osteoporosis. If you see like some of the ways that people degenerate when they walk, right? Like, it starts with something in their knee or their hip, and then it goes up in their neck, and then they're less and less mobile, and then they're hunched. And then, so like, you can see the progression of degeneration happen in people. The word there is ossification. There's a hardening, there's a rigidity that's not natural, because like, in the nature of like being, there's energy must move. And so like, whatever energy is stagnant, that's when there's trouble. And so, yeah, I think that can happen on so many levels.
You feel like it's happening younger?
Yeah, for sure. There's also a problem with, our brains don't fully develop until we're at least 25, right? Especially for men. And with part of that developmental phase is a myelination of the brain, where like, the brain becomes protected by fat cells, like these, I mean, not fats. Yeah, well, basically fat cells, like your brain is a lot of fat. And so like, it creates a Faraday cage around like the cells of your brain. And so when you don't have that and you're consuming a lot of technology, you're like, these waves are affecting your brain and affecting your eyes. And so we're like, in one of these books that I've mentioned, our brain is actually shrinking as we're going into the future now. And for 70,000 years coming to present, like, it was actually growing, but now we're going to this period where it's shrinking. What is that about? And so the technology that tomorrow's, like, today's luxury is tomorrow's just like necessity. And I think these necessities that we don't necessarily earn through effort, it creates a condition where we're degenerating. And I think like that's what rites of passages are all about. We don't have rites of passages anymore. Oh. There's no earning anything. You haven't earned your manhood. You haven't earned the car that you drive, the speed that you can drive it at, like anything. And so I think that is a huge problem that feeds into the mental health issue, is that like nothing is earned, everything comes, and there's no relationship with that thing. And then without that relationship, there's no gratitude. And without that gratitude, there's no fulfillment. There's no sense of like, in this present moment right now, this is what I have. And everything came before this moment to give me this thing. There's none of that. And so there's
not
a disconnect.
Only what came in your own biography. And thank you. That was beautifully said. Absolutely, 100%, I agree. But not only your biography has led you to this moment, mm-hmm. biographies of your parents, mm-hmm. the biographies of your grandparents,
I love this.
Biographies of their grandparents and their grand, all the way back to the common ancestor we all share. Mm-hmm. That's a whole lot of love that led you to this moment. And your entire biography and theirs, my entire biography and my ancestors, including my son, who is now my ancestor, talk about a mind blow.
That is.
It's all led to this conversation. All of it has led to this meeting of the minds,
yeah,
and hearts and spirits. That's something to be noticed. That's something to be held in gratitude. Every day I meet somebody and I know and I feel so potently, and I'm grateful to all of my ancestors that their love has brought me to this moment. So that's the fuel in my tank.
That's you know? Very potent fuel. It's Thank you for sharing
fuel.
That with me.
It's potent fuel.
Balance, pain mitigation, range of motion, athletic performance, focus, memory, immune system support, and REM level of sleep. All this and more made possible affordably with no pharmaceuticals, no injections, or invasive treatments. Just socks, insoles, and patches made stronger with the tactile patterning of Vox Life products. Scientifically proven to work and guaranteed. Now in the USA, Canada, and the UK. Visit www.dianedinkmeyer.voxlife.com. That's Vox, V-O-X-X, Life. You'll be glad you did.
One of the things that I've taken to with the Lost Traveler podcast, because let's face it, we're all lost travelers, every single one of us. And what I was getting to in reflecting on what you had said earlier about meeting technology in the moment that you're in and really only knowing what came before and not being prepared for the next level, is that we are here now. And we have the tools that are available to us in this moment. Mm-hmm. And how do we use those tools and our own biographies as far as we can understand them? And I do think biography study is very important. Mm-hmm. What I've taken to doing with my co-hosts is asking them to ask a question to the next co-host. Mm-hmm. Now, not to put you on the spot, you have a little bit of time to think about it, but I want to offer you the question that was left by my last co-host,
sure. Bill Pickle,
for you.
Okay.
And the question is, what do you do on a daily basis to make the world a better place?
I mean, I can answer that. One of the things that I do every day is I connect to my vision. And there's no way that you can, to simplify things, you can always put things in binary. So if you're in a survival state, you cannot be thriving. And if you are in survival state, you cannot be in creation state. And so that's why it's very important for me to connect to my vision, because there's no way that I could be connected to my vision if I was in survival state. And the generative feelings that come from connecting to something, like if you want to talk about like ancient technology, this is like Tantra, this is yoga, this is the union of the three, the triad. And there's nothing more important than, for me, than showing up 100% of who I am. And part of that is cultivating the sense of love that I have for myself. But it's, I have to cultivate that. Like, this is, goes back to this, you have to fill your cup up, right? And I have to cultivate this cup for me. And I have done it for such a long time that it's overflowing and it's just coming out of just love. And it's, when it's overflowing, all of that that comes out of that is not just for me anymore, but it's just this signature, this feeling, this thing that I exude that is free for everybody to have. And part of my vision is that people that I connect with are inspired in some way. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier about just giving people permission. And it's not like, oh, you have permission to do this. It's just, this is the way I am unapologetically, and you could be this way too. And there's, you can directly tell somebody what to do, or you can prescribe ways to help people, but if they're not ready, they're not going to take it. But what they will take, whether they're ready or not, is subconsciously, they will take the way that you're behaving. And that will leave a mark somewhere in their mind. And if they're ready to take it, they'll be inspired by it. If not, it will be inspiration for later. And that's just what I believe. So everything has to go back to the central locus of control, which is yourself. And if you're looking to impact anything outside of that, you have to have everything inside of that under control. And when I say under control, I just mean that I have a sense of love for myself that is so deep, that is so unmovable, that is so real, that I've experienced that. Like, I, it's a feeling that I have within myself that I exude that and I generate that. And there's a resonance to that that people can sense. And that is inspiring. And through my training organization, that's what I'm looking to transmit, is just transmit this thing that it can exponentially ripple out. And I know that there's only so much I can do by myself. And so I need to generate this thing that is so overwhelmingly, undeniably awesome that it just keeps going like the Olympic torch. Right. And part of, I think the basis of that practice is looking at these life tools, right? And I love the way that you put that, because you have to take inventory of your life tools. And that's what self-awareness is. Where are my tools coming up short? Where am I coming up short? And what's the relationship of that with my life tools?
Only you
because,
know.
Only yes.
You know, nobody can tell you.
Yes, that. Yes. And that's what self-awareness is. And you have to reflect on that, because there's a cause, there's a level of causation between where you come up short and how prepared you are and what your life tools have set you up for. And a big part of that, I think, is just creating the space for that to your mind already wants to show you that. And so when you create the space for that, those things will come and they will become apparent to you. And when they're apparent to you, they're undeniable, and you'll start seeing them everywhere. And as you see them everywhere, you start to learn from those experiences and you embody those experiences so that you can move to the next level. And that's just, I think people are so, it's easy to be caught up in the yang aspect of things, in the doing, in the work, and just feel like even if you're hitting a wall, to just keep is to allow time for things to culminate, for them to coalesce, for them to compound, for them to become non-linear, and then allow them to expand on their own. And that's like the relationship between the yin and the yang. And it's just like working out. People think that I work out hard, I'm going to get strong, but that's not where the strength comes from. That's where the breaking down comes at in. And if you keep doing that, all you're doing is just breaking yourself down. Like, it feels good because you have a connection with your body, but you're just breaking yourself down. When you get stronger is when you rest. That's when you get stronger. And that's not a conscious thing. Like, I have to get stronger while I'm resting. It just happens on its own.
It does. It does. The body has natural processes. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. I've been focusing a lot within sort of private conversations about what I call age-ication. Mm-hmm. And it's about preparing as much as is possible for the process of aging, educating around the whole process of aging. I recently, like a couple months ago, heard the term andropause for the first time.
I've never heard of that.
Look it up, brother. Okay. Because you'll get there. You've heard of menopause, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is essentially androgen.
Menopause, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, it's not connected to menstruation because men don't menstruate. But a lot of the changes that women experience in their menopausal state, men also experience at a certain stage of life. We experience, I'm going through it now. We experience body changes. We experience that, you know, ossification that you were talking about, but it's like, oh, okay, I can't do that anymore, or I can't do it as fast as I did. Mm-hmm. We go through hormonal changes. This is all very, very clearly documented and studied. And we need to talk about it more as men. Men's health is underheld, and it's been sort of sensationalized with Men's Health magazine, you know, and I mean, it's important that we talk about it, because even though the process is going to be different and unique for every individual, there are commonalities that we can look out for. Depression is one of them. The change in our mental health is more accurate, I would say, and sense of self. And when we go back to, as you were alluding to, that we, each of us, is the center of the universe. I mean, essentially, we are the universe.
Yeah.
Right? We're made up of all the same stuff. We're all the same mechanism.
Without an ego, we are just the universe experiencing itself.
So exactly. And so, you know, an ego, the way I define it for myself, is that part of the self with a capital S that sits somewhere out here and recognizes I am. It's that part of the self that recognizes this is, oh, I'm me, as separate from, but together with the rest of the universe. But if you think of a lighthouse, right, and the beam only goes so far, right? But it has a 360 degree rotation.
Yeah.
But it only goes so far. Well, that's a great metaphor, I think, for the human consciousness.
Yeah.
It only goes so far, and the rest is a mystery. I'm only fully aware of what is in 360 degrees of my sight.
Yeah.
I assume and imagine that half of the world hasn't broken off and is floating out into space somewhere. Yeah. Right? I can't tell you that that's not true. I can only assume, because I'm about 3 hours away from the Atlantic Ocean, 6 hours away from the Mediterranean, that they haven't bubbled up and you know, formed a big steam ball and evaporated into nothingness. It's very possible that that could have happened by now, or somebody pushed a button and a whole country is blown off the map. I would not know it where I am. So if we start there, if we start with our own vision, as you said earlier, right? I think you're on absolutely the right track. And it's a really important message for the world. Start with identifying your vision and make sure it's a good one.
Yeah.
Until it changes, because your vision will change.
Before
I turned
50, daily.
I never had to wear glasses, right? Now I have to wear readers. Right, your vision will change physically and otherwise.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé, blasé means to tell your story.
Can't believe it's been already an hour. I could keep talking to you for a whole two or three more at least.
But no doubt.
We'll definitely come back for another one.
This is great.
This is just the first introduction. But I there's good work to be done. There's good work to be done in the world. There are those of us who are here to be helpers.
I definitely sense that from you. I've picked up so much. And I think that, you know, when we're talking about life skills and you asked me, you know, life skills, I think the reason why I led with communication is like the number one is that's the transmission of
the frequency
energy of anything that's important to us. That's the way anything is received and anything is exchanged. And like you, I don't think like you understand how much I took from your metaphors and your analogies and your stories. And it's just beautiful. I really appreciate that. And I'm inspired to tell better stories packed with more. There's no way, right? It's just inspiring. That's all. I can't try to do anything and I'm not going to, but I am inspired that there's more that I can do. So.
Yes, as Yoda said, there is no try, only do or do not, right?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it, is that we can choose, and I talk about this a lot. I know my listeners are probably tired of hearing it, but I'm meeting a new soul every interview, every conversation that I have. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an important part of this discussion is that, you know, I don't experience time and space the way people do. I look at it not as a horizontal timeline, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, January, mm-hmm. February, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. It's a pinpoint in time and space. And that's all it is.
Yes. You're
it's
free.
It's what existed before the Big Bang, right? Mm-hmm. It's that mm-hmm. pinpoint. Or less than a pinpoint. Less than a moment. That's what's real. And surrounding that point, call it point A, is an infinite peacock tail of possibility. Right? If you imagine that unfolding in a peacock tail behind this point, right? Mm-hmm. Infinitely. All you have to choose is which path to go. You're the one with all the power to choose in that moment where your point B is going to be, right?
Yeah.
And if you arrive at that point B and you find that you don't feel good, you don't feel safe, you don't feel happy, you don't feel productive, effortlessly, magically, it turns into another point A surrounded by an infinite peacock tail of possibilities. And all you have to do is choose a different trajectory.
Yeah.
And that,
no, I love that second part is the beautiful part is that it's not like you have to start over. It's just have more data and you get to make another choice.
Exactly. Go from where you are with the tools that you've got and see what happens.
It's not a gain or a loss. It's just something else.
Well, I don't believe in failure.
Yeah, I love that. There's so much. That's what I'm saying. There's just so much there.
I can't help myself.
It reminds me of this. So my client, he was so excited. He called me. I was hiking. I was in the mountains. He's like, "Can I talk to you?" I'm like, "I have no reception." But so I hiked like 20 minutes. You know, I was at the hot spring. So I hiked like 20 minutes just to have a conversation. One of the things he shared with me was this quote that he had been thinking about, which is like, you're the master of your fate and the captain of your ship. And I think that really speaks to what you're saying, because like you can be lost at the ocean and you're looking for land and you end up somewhere else, but you have to figure out from that place if that's the direction you want to continue going or where you want to go. And I think part of like what we're talking about, ossification and rigidity, is mm-hmm. being aware that you have choice and what kind of choices that you have to change the direction of the flow of your life. And I think oftentimes people think if they end up somewhere they don't like, they'll just go back to where they started, or they have to like, oh, to start all over again. Like I'm 30. How do I recreate my career? I'm 50. Like I don't have time to do all that. It's like, what do you want to do then? You want to keep going that direction? But like, no, it's not even that. It's not that direction or that direction. You can go 360 degrees, like you say, and all of them are beautiful options that people just maybe they're not aware that it's right under their nose. And so that's, I think, the difficulty.
Well, and that's also in the teaching. That goes back to the question of who taught you your life skills and how well you learned them. How equipped were your teachers to teach you those particular skills? And if you sense a lack of proficiency, this is, you know, again, the lost traveler. If you're feeling lost, let that place of feeling lost be your point A.
You know what'd be really beautiful? If you had like a parable or a fable for every one of the life skills, but just one. I think you could do so much by just transmitting this story and like in each life skill. Like, I think it would be beautiful. It would be like your little Library of Alexandria. You should do that.
My Library of Alexandria. Will you help me with it?
Yeah, of course. You're the master of this. I'll be your hands.
Good. I'm no good working on my own. I'm a collaborative spirit, and I think great things can come when, you know, when visions collide.
Yes.
I really believe that. And I've found many people in this journey that not quite to the degree that I want it to be yet, but it's again, it's a journey. It's not the destination, right? Mm-hmm. So have you thought of a question for my next co-host?
Yeah, I think the most natural question is like, what is the vision that you have for the world that you're creating? I think that's just the natural question that I have for a lot of people.
For the world you're creating.
Yeah.
That again, it alludes to the power of the individual to manifest.
Yeah. And how big that can be, and how big what you have to become for that to happen.
That's right.
Your journey.
Be who you are in the moment that you're in, because you know what? You're as perfect as you can be. But the gift of our humanity, and we'll end on this, the gift of our humanity is that we can imagine what we perceive as better and strive for that. Tim, brother. Great conversation. I love this. This is fantastic. And we'll definitely stay in touch. We'll do it again.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm definitely would love to connect with you. So let's do
it. Great. We'll do it.
You've been listening to season 4 of the Lost Traveler podcast with Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.